on one level, it didn't live up to the expectations. People thought he was going to talk about Israel, Palestine, resolve all the issues and so on. On another level, this was a hugely fundamental, earth-changing, world-shattering kind of event, because what you saw was a paradigm shift from the clash of civilizations, which has dominated the discourse between America and the Muslim world for the last 7-8 years, towards a dialogue of civilizations. And that, of course, opens up all the possibilities of resolving issues, of creating bridges between different civilizations, of, in fact, even tackling the thorniest of all issues, which is the Israeli-Palestinian issue. So in that sense, I think that he has opened the door to a new kind of vision for the world.
Well, I think that clash of worlds idea is an important one, because when the towers fell, I think one of the first things that President Bush said was, please don't impute this to all Muslims or all people in the Islamic world. This was an extreme sliver, if you will, that did this, that did 9/11. And yet, here we are 7-8 years later. What do you think happened that made it seem like a clash of civilizations when, in fact, maybe it's only a clash of one slice of a civilization?
You're absolutely right, Tom. In fact, there's a tendency to dismiss previous presidents and rubbish whatever they did. And it's important to point out that President Bush constantly reached out to the Muslim world. He was the first president, I believe, to go 3 or 4 times to the Islamic Center, the big mosque on Mass Ave in Washington, D.C. He's had many dinners during the month of fasting, the opening of the fast in the evening. I was privileged to attend twice. So there were those attempts. At the same time, he was overtaken by events in Afghanistan, Iraq, and the association with war in the Muslim world. Now, here is a chance for the new president to set a new paradigm. And I believe he has. There's another point here, and that is that Obama is unique in all American presidents, and that's because of his birth. He is the son. He may be a Christian, but he's the son of a Muslim immigrant, which means he has an instinctive understanding of Islam. And this is what he displayed in Cairo in his speech. He used the phrase of greeting, Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be upon you. He referred to the Quran, the holy book of the Muslims, several times. He, in fact, referred to the strengths of Islam in terms of a peaceful religion and a religion that is capable of being part of the American vision. And this, I think, was the most significant part of his speech, where he just didn't talk of it as an alien or exotic religion, but something that is linked in some ways to American history, where the first country in the world to recognize the United States, in fact, was a Muslim country, Morocco, and not a European power, France, or some other power. He then went on to talk about Keith Ellison, the first congressman, Muslim congressman, using the Quran to be sworn in. And the Quran, of course, belonged to Thomas Jefferson, one of the great founding fathers. So in an interesting way, he was also pointing this link with Islam to American history for Americans themselves, that to recognize Islam is also to recognize the plurality, the vision, and the diversity of the American inheritance.
Professor Ahmed, what could you tell us about the expectations in the Islamic world of the United States for what comes next, given this foundational speech?
Well, the dangers with these big vision speeches always is that expectations are soaring. They go through the roof and they say, well, here's a great man of vision, a man of peace, and everything should be resolved. The reality is that the Middle East logjam, the predicament is not new. It's now almost over half a century, in fact. You have situations in South Asia, which are as problematic, you have which Americans are directly facing. You have the problem with Iran still bubbling, and nothing on one level is going to be resolved by a speech. On another level, it does offer leaders in that part of the world to begin to think of America in different ways, and to begin to say that maybe this is a man that can help us resolve these long-standing issues. And I hope that that is the response that will come from the Muslim world, that they feel that this is a new mood, a new change of tone, a tone that talks of respect, of dignity, of reaching out, of friendship, handshakes. Now, these are very, very different ideas from ideas of missile strikes and strength and sending in armies. We are talking of two different paradigms. We really are talking of the dialogue of civilizations. It can only work if now the Muslim world begins to respond seriously.
We're speaking with Ambassador Abkar Ahmed. He's chair of Islamic Studies at the American University, and you're probably just a couple of blocks from our studio right now. And I think in many ways the president is almost like a spherical mirror, and all the people surrounding him in some degree brought themselves in reflection of it. And that's what we're hearing in reaction around the world. People are hearing in some way what they wanted to hear. And so that brings us to the issue of Palestinians and the Israelis. And immediately afterwards, one of the Palestinian spokesmen said, well, see, now we know that President Obama means a Palestinian state with Jerusalem at its capital. Well, that is the antithesis of what Israel wants, and that's been a bone of contention the entire time. So in some ways, as you mentioned, I think, does he face the danger, does the president face the danger of expectations being raised that just can't be met?
You see, this is what I said, Tom, that the visionary, and President Obama in Cairo was speaking as a visionary. I mean, just think of where he's speaking. He's on campus at the university. I've been to that campus. That's the Al-Azhar. Your listeners may not know this, but this is the oldest mosque and center of learning in the Sunni world. It's 1,000 years old, very evocative for Muslims, produced hundreds of thousands of scholars and commentators over the centuries. Now, he's not speaking in parliament. He's not speaking to a group of politicians. So he's speaking as a visionary on campus to scholars, to students, to the future. And therefore, he's allowing his imagination to run. And I think that is what is so exciting. This is a man of ideas speaking on the global stage. He's speaking as an American. He's constantly bringing it back to America, but he's speaking on the global stage. That is why he touches a nerve. That's not the kind of language the world has come to expect of an American president, alas. Because again, if you go back to the founding fathers, if you go back to what Washington or Jefferson or Franklin are saying, they really are speaking in a universal language, and that's why they make such an impact on the world, and that's why the world responds to the idea of America. And that is on one level. On the other level, as you point out, there are realities on the ground like the Palestinian-Israeli issue, which can only be resolved by the Palestinians and the Israelis sitting down together and saying, there's a change of mood, in sincerity, in good faith, let us sit down and resolve this. It's not the issue of Jerusalem alone, Tom. You have the issue of the West Bank, the settlements. You have the issue of the return of the refugees. And then above all, the sense of security that Israel must feel before it begins to actually take any Palestinian peace movement seriously.
And I would say, though, from what you've been saying, that just purely as a politician, the president really did his homework on this one.
He certainly did. I think he was masterful. Again, these are little moments that make an impact in civilizations, in inter-civilizational dialogue and discourse. And sometimes symbolism is hugely important. I know that substance is perhaps even more important, but for the president of the United States, symbolism becomes really hugely impactful because it resounds all over the world. So for the president of the United States to use the words Salaam Alaikum and say it in Arabic, the Muslim greeting, it's not specifically a religious greeting, it's simply a cultural greeting. In the Middle East, Christians would be using this, Jews would be using this. It simply means like shalom.
Shalom Aleichem.
Yes, among the Jewish communities, they would say shalom, and Muslims would say salam. And yet he uses it. And I can imagine the impact on the Muslims because I've been talking to them, and they were thrilled at the fact that the president of the United States of America was actually recognizing their religion with respect. Now, this is a statement that I feel almost ashamed making because America at its heart, going back to the founding fathers, is a country with respect for other religions and cultures. If you read Benjamin Franklin inviting the Imam of Istanbul, saying, I would give him my pulpit to come to my church and speak. Now, we are talking in the early days of the Republic. And then from there, we come to a situation where Islam was demonized and marginalized and made to feel that the entire civilization of Islam was somehow worthless because of those 19 terrorists on 9/11. You begin to then feel the gap that Obama had to transcend and that he transcended successfully.